Hello and welcome to Distillations, weekly extracts from the past, present, and future of chemistry. I'm Robert Hicks. Each week we bring you stories on all things chemical, from lipstick to latex. As Valentine's Day approaches, we turn to the chemistry of attraction. On today's show, we'll look at how molecules help us mate and why your lover is called your flame. All this and more on today's episode of Distillations. The language of love is filled with references to fire. Our hearts burn with love. We carry a torch for unrequited loves, and old flames can be rekindled. These phrases may seem cliché now, but once fire was seen quite literally as the source of desire, and is today's element of the week. Fire was one of the four classical elements in ancient Greek philosophy, along with earth, air, and wind. This concept of fire was not the thing that burns, but rather an abstract principle associated with hot and dry qualities. The ancient Greeks thought of the heart as the body's furnace, the place where air was converted to vital force. Ancient and medieval physicians believed that an unusual amount of fire in the heart affected the rest of the body. An unrequited lover could become physically ill as his humors became unbalanced, leading to anxiety, loss of appetite, and despair. People born in the summer, when the weather was hot and dry, were presumed to have a more fiery temperament, with an excess of yellow bile. It's not without reason that people born under the fire signs, Aries, Leo, and Sagittarius, are supposed to be hot-tempered. In a philosophical system where fire and passion were determined by the humors, lovesickness could be preordained by a person's birthday. Fire eventually lost favor as an element, but its influence burns on in the way we talk about love and longing. And that's it for the element of the week. Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring, bound by wild desire. The way to a reluctant lover's heart has always been through the senses. If you look good, smell good, and cook up a good meal, you already have a big advantage. For centuries, men and women have used concoctions of various kinds to help nature along. Cosmetics, perfume, food and drink, even love potions have been brewed up to create great chemistry between the sexes. In our Mystery Solved segment, Anke Timmerman explains the history of aphrodisiacs.
Since the days of Hippocrates, forlorn suitors have concocted love potions to seduce unsuspecting paramours. Since it was believed that phallic shapes like asparagus and the horn of a rhinoceros stimulate the senses, many of these substances were brewed into love potions. But one ancient aphrodisiac, Spanish fly, stimulated more than the imagination. Like other blister beetles, the Spanish fly contains cantharidin, a substance which irritates skin tissue and, in the correct dosage, could cause an erection, a sort of medieval Viagra. Other connections between food and love are more directly tied to chemistry. Consider chocolate, thought to be an aphrodisiac ever since the Aztecs discovered the deliciousness of cocoa beans. Prepared chocolate contains the molecules phenylethylamine and serotonin. The brain naturally releases both of these compounds into the nervous system when we are happy and when we are experiencing feelings of love, passion, and lust. Likewise, eating spicy food or drinking coffee can raise the blood pressure and create a feeling of arousal. In fact, people who drink coffee, apparently a modern love potion, are believed to have a higher libido than tea drinkers. Chocolate, coffee, beetles, is this really the way to love? Thanks to modern chemical experiments, we now know that much of physical attraction is due to one of our most primeval senses, the sense of smell. It's not the latest perfume that attracts the opposite sex, but pheromones and other chemicals. We perceive pheromones without consciously noticing them, and yet they have a huge impact on our behavior. For example, one study showed that strippers who ovulate, a sign that they are available for breeding, receive more tips than those who are on birth control. And the smell of androstenedione, a chemical component of male sweat, has been shown to raise the levels of cortisol in females. yet another reason why gym-goers are more attractive than couch potatoes. Mystery solved. I'm Anke Timmermann. You know I call you sugar 'cause
you're so sweet. We at Distillations can't promise you the precise chemical formula to win your lover's heart. But we can offer pictures and even a couple of our favorite love potions. Check out our website at distillations.chemheritage.org. You're listening to Distillations. I'm Robert Hicks. Finally today, we turn our attention to the kitchen, where bakers everywhere are whipping up confectionery treats for their Valentines. Reporter Samantha Grant spoke with Michelle Paulzine, recently voted San Francisco's top pastry chef by San Francisco Magazine.
These are the sounds of Michelle Paulzine's world. As the pastry chef at Range Restaurant in San Francisco, Michelle spends her days inventing new ways to please the palates of her lucky patrons.
I'm kind of persnickety, but for some reason I like to make food that pleases people. I guess it's my way of not being contrary in the world.
With a willowy frame topped by a shock of bright red hair, a tattoo gracing nearly the entire length of her left arm, and a face framed by coolly retro cat's eye glasses, Michelle is clearly a woman with distinctive taste. This Sunday morning, she's already hard at work preparing baked caramel custards for tonight's menu.
Sugar has like a lot of properties that you need, like to make things like ice cream soft and to make cakes moist and soft. But, you know, things that taste really sweet are kind of gross. But this needs like a tiny bit of sugar. So I could have actually added more. I could have made it more caramelly. It was my first time making this, so I wasn't exactly sure where I was going.
Michelle is constantly experimenting with her recipes, tweaking them as she goes. I asked Michelle how much she thinks about chemistry when she's making these adjustments.
I don't think about chemical reactions while I'm baking unless I'm kind of developing something and then I'm really conscious of it.
Learning to forget the chemical rules of baking is something Michelle has spent years doing. She first learned how to bake by reading lots of cookbooks. Then, she worked her way up from dishwasher all the way to her current gig as a pastry chef in one of San Francisco's top restaurants.
You know, when you make enough things over a long period of time, that knowledge kind of becomes yours, and you start to understand how things work, just because you've been doing it a lot, and it starts to make sense, and you can kind of figure things out and make changes, and really, when you have, like, a solid foundation, you can start moving stuff around, and it ends up being more like cooking. Like, people say, I don't like baking, it's so rigid. Well, I mean, everything has like principles in the physical world, but if you understand them, then you can kind of rearrange stuff because you know what works and what doesn't work.
We got to talking about how to create different kinds of structure in baked goods by using different kinds of flour and manipulating gluten. Gluten is the name of the protein found in flour and is formed when glutenin and gliadin come together to form gluten molecules.
I mean, flours have different amounts of starch and protein because there's like high gluten flour and then there's like low protein flours that, you know, mostly use for desserts. Use like pastry flour or cake flour.
The more protein a flour has in it to begin with, the denser the pastry tart or bread dough will be. But the kind of flour you use isn't the only factor at play.
So the amount of protein that you get out of flour has to do with what you're adding to it and how much you work it, because the more you work flour, that's what creates the proteins as well. So you can do something, put something in flour like fat, which is going to inhibit the gluten forming. And water is going to really make them want to come together. Vinegar added to water, actually the acid inhibits the formation. So that's why if you see in certain like tart dough or like puff dough recipes, you see a little bit of vinegar or lemon juice added to the water that you add, and that prevents the formation of gluten.
Considering how much thought has to go into developing a recipe, especially when you have to think about things on the molecular level, I asked Michelle what she thought about taking the easy way out and using pre-made cake mixes.
That's lame. If you use a box cake, you can't adjust anything. Like, there's no leeway. You have to do what they say, and that's it. If you make it yourself, you can kind of tweak it, as we say, to get exactly what you want. And, you know, exactly what you want can change from day to day, especially if you're me.
Turns out, flexibility is more important than precision when it comes to professionally pleasing a sweet tooth. For Distillations, I'm Samantha Grant.
Samantha Grant is a reporter and filmmaker with Gush Productions in San Francisco. And that's it for this week's episode of Distillations. Today's quotation is by Robert Burton, a natural philosopher, from a 1621 book, The Anatomy of Melancholy. As drops from a still doth Cupid's fire provoke tears from a true lover's eyes, this fire of love burneth and scorcheth afar off, and is more hot and vehement than any material fire. 'Tis a fire in a fire, the quintessence of fire. Distillations is a presentation of the Chemical Heritage Foundation and is made possible by the generous support of the Richard Lounsbery Foundation. Mia Lobel is our senior producer. Our assistant producer is Victoria Indeviro, and our executive producer is Audra Wolf. Our theme music is composed and performed by Dave Kaufman. Additional music provided by Andrew Chalfin and from the PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com. Please tell us what you think about our program and send suggestions for future shows to distillations@chemheritage.org. Until next time, I'm Robert Hicks.